Welcome to the Hacking Happy podcast. My name is Penny Lacaso, and I'm the world's first happiness hacker on a bold mission to teach 10 million women how to flourish on their terms by 2025. The Hacking Happy podcast is recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations. I'd like to pay my respects to their elders, past and present, and acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. It always was and always will be Aboriginal land. This podcast is designed to help you reignite your spark, supercharge your energy, and channel more of it towards injecting more joy, more presence, more calm, and more meaning into each day. If that sounds like something you could use a little more of, let's get started. Hello, beautiful happiness hackers, and welcome to another episode of the Hacking Happy podcast. Today, I am joined by the amazing Fee Johnson. Welcome, Fee.
Thanks for having me, Penny, and hi to everybody listening.
It's a joy to have you here, because what our listeners may not know, Fee, is that at the moment you're part of my inner circle supporting me from a coaching perspective around money, which is why I wanted to bring you here, because I've never met anyone quite like you.
Oh, thanks, Penny. Yeah, I'm really pleased to have you in the Good Money Club. You're in good company.
I certainly am, and I feel like I'm in good hands. But before we get down to talking about money, because I think money is a very interesting topic, especially when it comes to women, I want to ask you what I ask every guest when they first arrive. I want you to tell us who you are as a human being.
Who I am as a human being is somebody who cares deeply about others. Sometimes that comes at the cost of how much I care about myself. I've always been a person who cared perhaps a little bit too much. I think it's part of my strength and also a bit of a character flaw sometimes too. I have a very big empathy response. I'm someone who loves singing. I have a dog. I love being outside. I love small business. And yeah, I always wanted to be a mum but never quite got to have that privilege. So I'm a mum with no children, which is a new way I've been thinking about it.
It's a beautiful way to think about it. I like the lens. I'm sure there are plenty of listeners that, you know, are sailing in the same boat as you. And I think it's really interesting how we can have different perspectives on the position that we're in when that differs from what we thought it would be.
Yeah, it's something that I talk with people, have been talking with people about a lot lately. It's just, you know, I'm in my mid-40s now, and yeah, life doesn't always turn out how we, you know, how we thought it might. I know this is deviating from our topic, but I had a conversation with a 12-year-old girl a few months ago where she basically told me her whole life plan. So she knew everything that she was going to do in her whole life. She knew how many kids she was having, when she was getting married, where she was going to meet her future husband, where they were going to live and how their lives were going to look. And I held her story and listened to what she had to say. And my advice to her was go home and write this all in a notebook and note the date that you wrote it. And I want you to come back to this notebook every year on this date and see if your life plan, you know, still feels the same. And I really hope she does, because I think it's lovely to think about what our 12-year-old self thought our life might look like, and then seeing her reflect on that as she, yeah, as she grows with her life into that story.
Well, that's interesting. I like the tangent. So I'm going to go with the tangent for a minute before we get done. I love a tangent,
right?
Especially on a podcast, right? Because you got to go where the energy goes. But I think it's really interesting, because I'm always curious to hear what people thought they would do with their lives when they were children. And I know for me, and I know listeners, I might not have shared this before, but I grew up on a farm. So I was a country kid, and I was obsessed with fashion when I was like under 10. And so I always wanted to be a fashion designer, which is so funny to me looking back now, because I was so creative on the farm, and like I was always dressed up to the nines on the farm, like riding horses, but, you know, dressed up doing it. But the irony is, you know, it was such a creative pursuit that I dreamt of, because as a child that inner creative hadn't been squashed. And then I had a moment in high school where a teacher told me, and I know we all have these stories, that I wasn't good at art and that I wasn't creative. And so my whole path went down a corporate line. And I'm not saying it was because of that moment, but I definitely think that it's funny that I had this real creative bend and it got squashed out of me. And I reckon it's only really come back in the last 3 years. But I'm curious, what were you going to be when you were a child?
Well, when I was 8 years old, I had the chance to work at the ice cream van at the school fete. So you know how you have the school fete and it's all a big fundraiser. And I worked in this ice cream van and it was the most thrilling thing ever. I loved like people placing an order and working out how much the ice cream cost and then giving them back their change and handing the ice cream over to them. And I was loving it so much that one of the teachers had to come and ask me to move on so somebody else could have a turn. So I think my love of small business started very young, and that's kind of carried all the way through my life. I think I always knew that I would have my own business, but when I was in high school, I thought that I was going to be a social worker. And I thought that because I was that friend that people always brought their worries to. So I always knew that I was really good at listening to people's challenges and what was happening for them. And I felt like I was pretty good at, you know, either being an empathetic shoulder or giving advice that seemed to help people. But I realized as I got older that my empathy response is actually too big. It felt like my empathy response was too big to work in a field like social work. And I diverted away from that path because for the same reason my mum decided to leave nursing when she was quite young, because her empathy response with the children she was nursing was just absolutely too much. It's interesting that I followed the thought of the small business, the girl in the ice cream van, who then realizes that social work isn't perhaps what she's called for. But in a way, I've managed to turn my accounting skill into almost like a social work kind of role, because I now sit and hear people's business and money challenges and I give them advice that helps them feel seen, heard, understood, and able to move forward.
And that's a perfect segue. See, it's always good to diverge and converge, right? I just feel you always end up where you're meant to be. It's interesting because one of the things that you're called is the money rainmaker. And I think, you know, I stumbled across you thanks to the amazing Mia Farman, who is, I believe, a good friend of yours and who taught me how to write campaigns and helped me reconnect with my creativity. And I was so curious, like this money rainmaker, I'm like, what is a money rainmaker? Who is this woman? What does she do? And after following your beautiful campaign that you recently did, which we'll talk a bit about in a moment, in terms of sort of women in business and asking them questions, you know, sort of pulling back that curtain about how they manage money as business owners, you know, it really struck a chord. And I'm just interested as to why are you so passionate about helping women manage money?
My qualifications are in accounting and human resources. So that's kind of my trade. And I suppose for me, I see business as this incredible economic tool that women and all peoples can use to change their situation. I see money as a tool to change the world. And I've always loved working with business owners who were doing something more than just selling a product or selling a service and going home. So I love thinking about small business as a tool for economic empowerment, and beyond that, as a tool to create impact and make the world a better place. And the reason why I'm so obsessed with money is because that is my trade. And I can see money as this incredible tool that women can use to change their own financial situation. And then beyond that, we know that women tend to bring other women up with them. That's something that's been known in the community development sort of area for decades and decades, that when you invest in women, one woman who's able to elevate herself from perhaps poverty will bring another five women up with her, because that's how we do things. We do things in community. And so I love thinking about when one of my students or my clients tells me that they shared what they'd learned from me with another woman, and she was then able to go and do something like increase her prices or increase the amount of money that she's making. To me, that is just the ultimate ripple of my sphere of impact being able to be kind of amplified as it moves out into the world.
Let's talk about your recent documentary, which people can look at on your Instagram, which we'll drop in the show notes. I thought it was amazing. Like, it was so well done for a small business owner. It was so beautifully done. And so, as I mentioned, the doco was called Lifting the Curtain. And I love that you sliced it into a series of reels, making it sort of bite-size. And it spoke to what was really going on for women in business when it came to money. I'm curious as to where the inspiration came from to do something so unique.
Yeah, so look, women tell me every day in my work life, they tell me their money secrets. So they tell me the sort of things that are going on in their mind when it comes to money. And I hear many of the same sentences over and over. I'm sure the same thing happens in your work, Penny, that women have thoughts in their mind that they share with a trusted person such as me or you. And they think that they're the only person in the whole world that thinks like that. And because I keep hearing these same sentences coming out of different people's mouths, I wanted to, you know, I thought for a long time about how can I actually bring these stories to the surface, but how can I do it in a way that actually feels, you know, safe and wholesome to the person watching it and the person sharing their money secrets. Yeah, so I made the decision to create a mini documentary. And by the way, I've never done anything like this before in my life. I had no idea what I was doing. And I invited 8 of my clients to come and be part of the documentary. We rented an Airbnb for a few days. And yeah, I wrote 10 quite difficult questions to answer, because I knew that the strength of the documentary was all in the strength of the questions that I asked. And so I asked these 10 questions of these 8 really different business owners. So they all came from different career backgrounds, different ethnic backgrounds, different maturity of business, different types of business. I think the one thing that united them was that they were all clients of mine, so they felt safe sharing their money thoughts with me. And I think that's what really came across through the camera, is that these ladies were sharing really amazing and intimate money thoughts with me, because they felt safe that I could actually treat their story with, you know, with the reverence and care that it needed. And over many hours of blood, sweat and tears with myself and the very small documentary crew, which is really just a videographer, me and a couple of other helpers, yeah, we cut those into 10 two-minute episodes, which are all on my Instagram, but they're all also available if somebody wants to come to my website. They can go and experience the episodes in their own time and kind of work through them. Yeah, because I think we can all answer those questions for ourselves and think about what are the lies we've been told about money, or when were the times when I made a big money mistake and what can I learn from that?
So what did you find? I've seen this throughout 9 years in business, whether it's in keynote in front of thousands or whether it's just on a coaching conversation or with a prospective client. This thing that we have as humans where we have these inner thoughts, often they're self-deprecating, and we think we're the only person that's done that, that's thought that, that's experienced that, and we feel completely alone with it. And often just getting it out into the world is the relief, because it's like, oh, you know, I'm not normal. Like, this is completely normal. Mm. I'm curious as to what were some of the things that you found, or that you already, like, what are some of these secrets that you hear consistently from women that they struggle with, so that I'm sure our listeners have similar thoughts and won't feel so alone just in you verbalizing?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the first question that I asked was, what is the biggest lie that you have been told about money? And the most common answer was that you need to work hard to make money. And this is such a pervasive thought amongst particularly people who live in Australia, that hard work is how we are going to get somewhere in life. And that comes from our migrant and convict stories. Money stories are different in other cultures, so there are different narratives that run through Indigenous families and Islander families, and people from all over the world view money very differently. And Australia is this melting pot of so many different birth countries and ethnicities all coming together. And generally the way to make it in Australia is to work hard. How that plays out in business is that we start our business feeling really excited about the possibilities ahead of us, and we start working really hard. And if the money isn't coming in, we think the answer is to work harder. But actually, when you stop and think about it, the most wealthy people in the world are not the people that are working 60-hour weeks. And it takes a lot of insight to be able to slow ourselves down and realize, actually, all of this work that I'm doing isn't actually progressing me financially. That was a very common answer, was this idea that money comes when you work harder. And that's something I'd already helped all of those ladies unpack, which is why they were so clear about it when they were asked in the interview. Another thing that was very clear from the documentary was that it actually doesn't matter how much money you have in your bank account, you might still think that you are not good at managing your money. A lot of women come to me with hundreds of thousands of dollars in their bank account and then say to me, I'm not good with money. And I will say, why don't we take a few steps back here and look at the fact that you've been running your business for a long period of time and you've managed to manage your money until now. So you are doing a great job with your money. And that can be the same whether somebody has $50 in their account or $500,000. Women have this idea that they are not good with money. We do not trust our financial decisions. We're always looking externally for advice. So how do I get more advice from my accountant? Or maybe my husband or my brother or my uncle might know how to do this and be able to teach me. But actually, women are amazing at managing money. When you look at the statistics of how women run the family budget, how they do things like plan a wedding and manage the budget of that, how they manage the budget of a home renovation, or how they work out how to, you know, go on a round the world trip and how to actually plan that out. Like, women are actually amazing at managing multiple things at once, making great decisions about things. But when it comes to money, we just doubt ourselves so much. I could talk for hours about why we doubt ourselves so much, but I think a big part of it is actually the fact that when you look to the kind of money, finance, accounting kind of industries, they are run by middle-aged white men or older white men, and men have held the keys to the financial kingdom since the beginning of time. Women are now independent. We have our own money, but we are still fighting against all of these ideas and narratives and stories that have been told to us through millennia, that the men are the ones that have the money and the women are the ones that, you know, take care of the children and manage the household. White men specifically have been holding or gatekeeping all of this education and information from their clients. And what is happening now that there are so many more women in the financial industries, we are sharing our knowledge and advice and tips and support with other women, because that's how women do things. We do things together.
Hey there, let me ask you, are you done with feeling overwhelmed and unsure of where to start when it comes to creating the freedom and flow to work and live on your terms and do it with joy in your heart? You've decided it's time to invest in a coach and fast track the shift you've been longing to make, but it feels like you're stepping into a world of snake oil sellers. I hear you. And you're right, finding a coach that you connect with that actually delivers on their promise can be hard. So many prospective clients tell me how they've been burned, and it makes me feel ill. It's for all of these reasons I created a simple free cheat sheet to help you find the right coach for you and get the results that you need when it comes to making this shift. Simply DM me the word coach via Instagram at hackinghappy.co and I will shoot you a copy straight away. And now back to the podcast. What do you think needs to change when it comes to women and money? And how can we start
to support ourselves and each other in making these shifts?
I think the very first thing is that we need to start talking about money more. So whether that's talking with your daughters, talking with your mothers, talking with your friends, talking with other females in business, the more that we talk about a subject, the less taboo it gets. And we've seen this happen in the kind of sexuality and space. There's a lot more women are now talking about sex as being something that is, you know, a beautiful and enjoyable part of life. But that is only now being done because women are starting to be less afraid to talk about that topic. So it takes so much of the sting out of it. And I think that's how we need to approach money as well. We need to say, this idea that talking about money is impolite is stopping women from making more money. So if we can support each other to have safe and wholesome conversations about money, even things like, what is your salary? Like, how much do you get paid in your job? Great. How does that compare to how much I get paid in my job? That's a way that corporate or employed women can help each other to understand more about money, is just to share, hey, this is how much my salary is, and this is how I approach my money. We all have different approaches to our money.
It's so, well, it's, you know, it's funny because I always studying trauma with Gabor Maté, and he always says, where there's tension, pay attention, which I love, right? Because that's where we often avoid, but that's where the magic is. It's where the opportunity. And money, speaking about money is an immediate tension for me, because again, it's my conditioning, especially coming from a corporate background. And, you know, I worked in a large corporation for 16 years and they had salary bands. So you talking about what you earn and all of that, they were adamant that you should not talk about what you earned.
And how do you think that worked out? How did that work out for the women in your firm?
Completely apparent now, because, and people didn't, right? People didn't. But it was because, I'll guarantee you, because there was a massive salary gap between men and women, first and foremost. So it just further fed that problem. But equally, they were obviously doing it because they didn't want people talking about it, because then people would start complaining about, well, hang on, we're doing the same job and that person is getting 20% more than me. So it's funny because immediately I get attention because I'm like, oh, I don't like talking about what I earn. I don't like talking about any of that stuff. One, because I was told it was, you know, not to when I was younger. But two, then I was in a system that for nearly 20 years said, don't speak about what you earn.
When you think about anything that's been kept a secret in any aspect of life has never benefited the majority. Okay, so when I think about these corporate structures where nobody is even allowed to talk about their salary, let alone encouraged to, generally what happens is that is an environment for unfairness to breed. And people are still arguing about whether there's a gender pay gap. If we had clarity and transparency on everybody's salaries within an organization, it would give an opportunity to people who are perhaps have less power and influence to actually gain some power and influence, because they can actually see where they're sitting. And I think, you know, the same goes in small business or any kind of business. Women are not making as much money as men in their businesses. We're just not talking about it. So we talk about the gender pay gap, which is generally discussing people who are employed. We sometimes talk about the funding gap. So sometimes we talk about the fact that women-owned businesses don't secure as much funding as male-owned businesses, which I think is absolutely terrible. However, most female businesses don't need VC funding. We just need revenue. We need to be paid well for the work that we do or the products that we sell. And that gender pay gap within the small business community is something that I'm really, really interested in uncovering. And the more that we talk about how much money we're making, the more that we can see how, oh, okay, so I just heard, I don't know, Jane over here just told me that she's charging $500 an hour. I've been charging $100 an hour. Maybe I can actually start charging more because Jane is, so why can't I? So I suppose this topic of like talking about money with other women is in the same category as, if you can see it, you can be it.
So one of the things, I don't think I mentioned this in the Money Club, but one of the things that sort of speaks to what you just said is, a couple of weeks ago I had a prospective client reach out on my website, and she's a highly trained psychotherapist, has been working in the industry for one of the most renowned companies in terms of doing psychotherapy for the last 9 years. And it was funny because her message to me, you know, could have been taken two ways, but basically she reached out because she said, how is it you're not yet a qualified psychologist? She said, you're doing this work that you do that is a combination of psychology, helping people build their businesses, unlocking blocks through trauma therapy. And she said, and I'm in a similar domain and have been doing this work for 9 years and I'm charging about a sixth of what you charge an hour.
Mm.
And she said, I want to learn what you know because I should be charging more. And I was like, I could either be offended by that in saying, is she saying I'm not worth it, which is not what she was saying at all, or is she saying, gosh, you know, why can I not have the confidence to market my skills in a way that actually values them the way they should be valued?
It's such an interesting point, Penny, and I'm glad that you looked at both angles from that query that she had of you, because I think there's this idea in a lot of females, especially business owners, that if we do really good work, somebody will choose us.
Oh,
right. So it's like you're waiting to be chosen for the sports team. And if you just keep doing the best work and you keep showing up every week and doing the work and doing great work, that somebody will recognize that you are great at what you do. But that is not how life or business works. When we think about some of the most successful musicians in the world, so I'll take Taylor Swift for an example. Now, no shade to people who love her, but I find her music kind of uninspiring. Like it doesn't hit me the way that it hits others. And the question is Taylor Swift a global superstar because she's so talented, or is it because she has a huge marketing engine behind her, which is, I believe, driven by her mum? Kudos to Taylor Swift's mum. And actually, what allows us to charge the high price is not whether we are good at what we do, it's whether or not we're good at marketing. Mm. And I think that this is something that so many business owners don't realize, is that if you focus all of your time and energy on building your craft, like this amazing psychotherapist that you're talking about, and you don't work out how to pitch yourself or how to present yourself or how to market yourself, nobody is going to know that you have all of these amazing talents, because we have to be the ones that advocate for ourselves. And I think that goes into a corporate space as well, is that if you don't know how to pitch yourself for a promotion or how to pitch yourself or put your hat in the ring for working on this big project that's going to increase your visibility, the only way that you're going to get further in your career is if you happen to have an amazing manager that sees your potential. So I think women can learn a lot from thinking about Taylor Swift or Beyonce and thinking, how have they become so well known? And how are the ways that they position themselves as the sort of expert in their field? And what can I sort of take from that way of, building confidence through marketing rather than through being the best psychotherapist that ever was?
And I think what you speak to is, you know, is 90% of the challenge, in that it's confidence, right? It's the confidence. It's almost like we've been taught as women not to speak about how great we are at what we do, because it feels very masculine. It feels very egotistical. I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying that's what I see in my clients. And it's funny because when I think of the psychotherapist that I spoke to, I was like, I know I'm fucking good at what I do. I know I've got an amazing amount of experience across a very diverse range of things. It's completely unique. And I'm confident and I know the results that my clients get, because the case studies we do after I work with them are amazing. Like, I've got a woman who writes up my case studies. She's a psychology sales writer. And she said, I've never, ever seen people speak about an experience the way your clients speak about it. I'm confident in what I do. And again, I can say that now. I wouldn't have said that 5 years ago. But so much of that is, you know, knowing your worth and that you are worth, for most women, a lot more than what you're charging.
I mean, I've got my own ideas, but what do you think is the reason that women are lacking confidence in that, learning how to position themselves better? What do you think is holding us back?
I think it's exactly what you alluded to, and you're exactly right when you say you assume it's the same in corporate, and it absolutely is, because I saw it for years. It goes back to childhood, right?
men are taught from a very early age to compete. Yeah. And competition comes with putting yourself out there constantly, right? And so with competing, you have to have a confidence. Whereas women, again, I'm generalizing, but we're taught to be good girls. We're taught to people please. And so people pleasing is about not rocking the boat. It's not about sort of self-promotion. It's about how do I just appease people and make them happy? And in doing that, directly linked to it is what you said, which is if I do a good job, someone will notice because quite simply, I'm being a good girl.
One of the things that I see consistently is that this constant behavior of people pleasing. And so I think women are so busy because of the way that the patriarchy has kind of conditioned us, making everybody else happy, that there is no time or skill built in actually, how do I get what I want? How do I get out there and ask for what I want? And one of the simplest ways to do this that I've learned myself, but I teach so many of my clients, is this beautiful little practice called 100 no's. And it's all about teaching women how to get comfortable with rejection. So what you do is you put 100 no's on a piece of paper on the wall. And your job is to get out there and ask for everything you've ever wanted but been too afraid to ask for. Here's the thing, women love a list. We love to tick things off. And so it normalizes the no. So every no you get is a win because you get to tick it off your little list. But the reality is getting yeses is a numbers game, right? You can't get yeses unless you get no's. And I think women need to learn that, and they need to learn how to get comfortable with getting rejected because that is the reality of the path to getting what you want. But it's a brilliant practice and it's gold because some of the yeses, I always say, that myself and my clients have used this, that have received by putting themselves out there continually, blow your mind.
Yeah, I love that. It definitely aligns with my thoughts, which is that I think women are really scared to make a mistake. We are absolutely terrified that we are going to do something wrong. And I think that comes back to that same concept of being the good girl, the people pleaser, the boat stabilizer instead of the boat rocker. And that we have this idea that if I can't get it perfect the first time, then it's just way too embarrassing and I'm never going to do it. When actually the way to be successful in life at anything really is to have a go. And I think we have this idea that confidence will just come eventually and one day we'll wake up, oh, today's the day. The confidence landed while I was asleep and now I'm confident. But I'm sure you would agree with me, Penny, that confidence comes through doing. And you can't think your way to being confident. You can only do your way to confidence.
Absolutely. Could not agree with you more, Fee. Like it's so much of what I teach is a practice. The problem is, and we've spoken about this, is that humans, we're wired for the quick fix. You know, we want the painkiller. Yes. We don't want the vitamin. Take the pain away. And take
I want
away.
The painkiller.
Yeah.
I want all the painkillers.
The reality is anything that is worth having, I mean, I'm stating what's already been stated, is a long game. The magic happens in the long game. And so much of these things, whether it's confidence, whether it's being more present, whether it's any of this stuff, it's a practice. And so it's about showing up every day. It's like yoga. I always liken it to yoga because I'm a big yogi, right? So yoga, I've been doing it for 20 years. Some days I can stand on my head, no problems. Mm. Other days I can't balance for shit. But the thing is, yeah. I keep showing up. And over 20 years, my practice for a woman that's 50 is fantastic. I love it. But I still have bad days. That's like you say, that's what confidence is. So tell us, Fee, I've only been working with you for a couple of weeks and I've learned so much. And I just think for anyone listening who wants to shift their perspective around money that has their own business, Fee is definitely worth looking up because I feel like they call you the rainmaker. I've never in my life met anyone who has, you know, a background in accounting, does not feel like an accountant at all. Right, but you've got that experience, you've got that knowledge, but it's almost like I feel like you're a money therapist because you have this beautiful way of bringing in obviously this desire that you had as a child around the social work, but bringing in the psychology and making a safe space for people to explore their relationship with money in a really meaningful and intentional way so that they can actually start to realize some of the dreams that they have, which is just completely unique. So kudos to you, kiddo, for what you've done. I think it's really impressive.
Thank you so much. I had somebody say to me the other day who's fairly new to business. She said, I wish that I could be like you and just when I speak, it just kind of comes out and makes sense. But the actual fact of it is I've been trying to make it this simple for nearly 25 years now. And I think trying to make things simple is actually one of the hardest skills that you can acquire. And it's something that I really love doing for women is taking all of their money secrets on board, listening to them and translating them into how can we take that money story that you currently have and start thinking about rewriting it? And how can we then, once you've got your new story, now what are the actions we can take to actually help you make more money? Yeah, I absolutely love holding space for women. I do sometimes get called the business therapist or the business psychologist or the business. Some people call me the rainmaker. Some people call me their business coach. I've had many different hats. And I think the simplest thing that I can say is that I help women to feel good about money so that they can make more of it. And I can help them move through the emotional stuff that comes up around money into the practical things of putting your offers out into the world and asking people to buy them and then managing the emotions that come from making more money and then going back around in the circle of business, which, you know, we talked about last week about the beauty of having something valuable to share with the world and how money plays a role in that beautiful cycle of business.
So tell us, V, one thing women can do to start to change their relationship with money if that relationship is not a positive one.
Start talking about it. Start talking about it with a trusted friend or start talking about it with yourself. So that could be as simple as getting out a journal or some way of recording yourself speaking and just start to slow down and hear the words that are going around your mind when it comes to money. Because once we get those words crystallized and we can see them in front of us on a notebook or we can hear them in our own voice, then we can start to have the power to change what those words are going to be in the future.
This has been an absolute joy. I have a set of statements that I get people to complete at the end of each podcast and I tweak them based on what that person is an expert in.
Ooh, great.
I'm going to invite you to complete these little statements. The first one is money is
the tool to change the world.
Mm. Talking about money feels like
hot flush, anxiety, weird.
I wish money would.
I wish money would feel easier for all women.
Mm. And I celebrate money by
making space for her in my week.
Mm, that's a good one. Sophie, we're going to wrap it up. But before we do, I almost feel like we've got the idea for your next campaign, which is exposing the money gap between women in small business and men. Just a suggestion. Because I feel like that's a real thing. And it's not something that's like VC funding and the fact that it's only 3% for women compared to something like 78% for men or whatever it is spoken about at length. Like you said, the corporate pay gap, spoken about at length. But I think helping women understand the difference between how they're pricing themselves as small business owners versus what men are making is really profound.
Yeah, I would love to tackle that one day. So if anybody listening to this podcast knows how I could access that sort of data, then please come forward. I've been thinking about it for many years. Yeah, it's something I'd definitely like to bring to the surface.
Sophie, where can people find out about you and the work that you do?
My name is Fee Johnston and my business is called Peach Business. And I hang out mostly on Instagram, so you can find me there at peach.business. Or you can go straight to my website to read all about me, get some free resources. And the website address is peachbm.com.au.
Thank you so much for being here today and thank you so much for coming into my world. It's a pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me, Penny. And before I exit your podcast room, I'd like to acknowledge that I'm on Wurundjeri country and I know that you do an acknowledgement of country at the start of your podcast, but I've been remiss in not doing this because it's really important to me to acknowledge that I am on unceded Aboriginal land and, yeah, very grateful for the custodians that have protected this land and country for millennia to be where I sit today.
And such an inspiration. I love the Imperfects podcast, and I love how they always speak about the history of storytelling in over 40,000 years of Indigenous culture. And I always sort of sit that in my heart when we have these conversations and feel that there's a beautiful way in sharing our stories, in honouring that history. It's magic. Thanks, beautiful human.
Thanks for having me, Penny.
Thanks for joining me on today's episode of the Hacking Happy podcast. Reviews are so important to empowering more beautiful humans just like you to lead wholehearted and flourishing lives. If you enjoyed your listen, I'd love if you could take a moment to leave a review and a rating on your preferred podcast listening platform. If there was something that resonated from this conversation, I invite you to take a screenshot and share your thoughts on social media. Tag me in so I can respond. If you've got a friend you feel needs to hear this episode, copy and paste the link and drop them a message now. It might be exactly what they need. Until next time, happiness looks good on you.